Hello and welcome to another episode of Little Fish. My name's Andrew Hunter-Murray and I'm here with my two close colleagues, Dan Schreiber and Anna Sierzynski, and we're here to discuss the brilliant facts that you, the audience, have been sending in to podcast@qi.com. We've got loads of facts. Let's have some. Come on. Who's got a fact?
I got one here from Tom Bessois. Tom Bessois says, the American actor John Cazale only appeared in 5 feature films. All of them were nominated for Academy Awards for Best Picture.
Wow.
He did The Godfather, The Conversation, The Godfather Part 2, Dog Day Afternoon, and The Deer Hunter.
Amazing.
Yeah, he did 5 of these in a 7-year period, but tragically, he got very ill. He had lung cancer, and so he died, and that's the only reason that he didn't star in more.
I've only seen 2 of them. I've seen The Conversation, and what was the first one you mentioned?
The Godfather.
No, I haven't seen that.
Deer Hunter.
No, yeah. I haven't seen that.
Godfather Part 2.
Nope.
Yep, very good.
Dog Day Afternoon.
Oh, I've only seen one of them. I've only seen one of them. Does he play the same? Because sometimes people play a special role in all films. Like they'll play a policeman who's just got a random one-liner. Was it like that, where he just plays?
No, he had substantial roles, and he was very much loved. There's been documentaries about him. People really miss him. Al Pacino held him as one of the great actors of his day. He said, I just would have been in movies for the rest of my career with him. He was dating Meryl Streep when he passed away. He was part of a very big sort of unit of actors.
I think I've heard of him. I think maybe he feels like a famous, like edges of gangster films kind of lad.
Right.
It does feel like he's got a type. He hasn't done Never Been Kissed, has he? You know, it's definitely down that hard-hitting Pacino-esque film.
And I've actually got a little bonus exciting element to this fact, because that's often the fact that is told. He was in 5 movies, all for Best Picture. He actually appeared in a 6th after his death, because they used archive footage of him in Godfather Part 3, and that was nominated for an award as well, Best Picture. And he was in that, technically.
Brilliant.
So, 6 Brilliant. Or 6.
So good. You'd want to employ him, wouldn't you? If he'd made a crap film, you'd be like, should we get him in and we'll get the Oscar? You've made Piranhas 5 or something.
That's what people do with Sigourney Weaver in sci-fi films these days.
Have they all won Oscars?
No, but they are treated with more respect than maybe they would be if Sigourney Weaver wasn't in them, in my opinion.
Yeah,
if you're making a sci-fi film, let's say Avatar 3, you might want to just get the weave in. And, you know, she brings a touch of class.
Yeah. She sure does.
That's what we do with podcasts, though, isn't it? You know, if people want to make a great podcast, they try and get us in. I mean, it hasn't happened yet, but...
Oh, I thought you meant one of us was brought in for the class. Which one of us has been drafted in just for the touch of class?
Do you think we'd get another Chortle Award if Sigourney Weaver came on as guest?
I actually do.
And do you think that would be the proudest moment of her life?
I can't think of a higher one, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do another fact.
Let's do another fact. This is from Oliver Frederick, and this is that in Sydney, if you speed 30 kilometres an hour over the speed limit, you'll be fined about $650.
Okay.
And in India, the fine for the same crime is 2,000 rupees. And so Oliver Frederick has done a little bit of working out that James Harkin would love. He said, in order to pay the same amount of fines in India as you would have to in Australia, you'd need to either break the speed limit over 20 times, or you could, and he's looked at all the fines in India for all these things, you could speed under the influence of drugs or alcohol without a valid license or wearing a seatbelt, driving recklessly into oncoming traffic while texting, running a red light and not stopping at a stop sign, all whilst blocking an ambulance from reaching an emergency. That would just about get you to $670. So there you go.
That's so cool.
His top tip.
And that's why they film all those chase scenes in India, because it's just a lot cheaper for the movies.
Yes, yeah.
The judge, you'd be like, but I'm going to waive the fee for the effort, because that was absolutely stunning.
Yeah, it's like shooting the moon when you're playing hearts, isn't it?
Yes.
If you collect all the bad cards, actually you win.
Perfect.
Yeah, love it. All right, here's a fact, and this one comes in from Simone Few. And it's a great fact. It's that Catherine Parr, last wife of Henry VIII, was named after Catherine of Aragon, the first wife of Henry VIII.
Bell.
As in, Henry VIII had so many wives over such a long period of time that the youngest one was a baby who was named after his first wife, who was her godmother.
That's incredible.
Isn't that absolutely hideous?
Well, hey, hang on, that's not hideous.
Can I not slut shame Henry VIII? Is that not even? Is that not?
You know what? He never gets to tell his side of the story.
Oh my god!
So
oh my god!
There's literally
a very successful West End musical which finally has told their stories.
Yeah, it's not his story, is it? We need the West End musical that tells his side of the story.
I'd love to try and pitch that to producers. Yeah. We need to hear Henry's side of the story.
It's a musical called One. It's about the one man at the center of these six, you know, whinging women.
Well, four by the end of it. Wow, that's very funny. That's very funny indeed. Yeah.
I've got another fact. Should I do one?
Mm.
Okay, this is from Sam Tomlin. I'm a math teacher by trade and continually find fun and interesting ways to present material. Before going through Pythagoras' theorem again, I discovered this. Friend of the podcast, President James Garfield, created a proof of Pythagoras' theorem. And this makes him the first president to contribute something original to mathematics, as well as the first president to eat anally.
Wow. I mean, just one of those things is, you know, a reason to be proud you were alive.
Yeah.
But both.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's so cool.
Isn't that awesome?
It's just so interesting coming up with a new proof of something that is already proven, as in there are lots of different ways of getting to that truth of Pythagoras' theorem, but to come up with a new way mathematically of doing it, I just think is very impressive.
Yeah.
Or pointless, you know, if we've proven it.
I suppose.
Okay, so there's a book that's called The Pythagorean Proposition, and in it, Garfield's proof is 231 in a list of 370.
It's too many.
That's too many.
We don't need that many proofs. I believed it when Pythagoras said it.
Good source, but, Pythagoras.
Yeah.
In a way, by going around the houses and doing something in a non-traditional, like getting something demonstrated in a non-traditional method, isn't James Garfield sort of foreshadowing his own eating everything through his bottom later in life? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, lovely.
Because there he had to circumvent the normal route and go in another way.
Yeah, that's what they said to make him feel better about it, as they shoved the champagne up there.
This is just like your Pythagoras work, actually, Mr. President. Yeah.
That's great stuff. Okay, what about this one from Peter Campbell, long-time listener, first-time emailer.
Mm.
He specifies to the show he's sent emails before.
Love it. Love it.
He said, I think we were talking about sports teams with...
You already know that's a hallmark of quality for a good email.
Yeah, you know? I bet you didn't even read the rest, Andy. That just made it in.
I don't know what it... I'm excited to find out what it's about.
It's actually very pro-fascist, the rest of it. I think we were talking about sporting teams with weird, wordy, coincidental names. And he said, in the 1970s, my team, Albion Rovers, had the spicy trio of Bill Curry, Sid Sage, and Albert Rice. You could make a whole meal out of them. I will say it's not a brilliant team, Albion Rovers. They are in the fifth tier of the Scottish Football League. But this chap does then go on to say, it's just, okay, focus carefully on this, these couple of sentences. It's just a pitter. The team doesn't have the same caliber of player now. I still support them though. Whatever the result, win or lose.
Yeah.
Rise or fall. Had to look that up. Fall is a very hot kind of curry, hot in Vindaloo. There's none more supportive than ghee. So he sort of descends into nonsense by the end of it, to be honest.
Well, thanks for writing your email in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here is a fact from David Carey. My fact is, down under is a lake named Lake Wombat. Right? Where do you think that might be?
Sorry, down under is a lake.
Just in down under, you know where down under is. Yeah, yeah.
Is that a clue? It's not actually in Australia.
It's in New Zealand.
New Zealand.
And the reason is that it's named after a 19th century gold prospector called Jake Wombat Irwin.
Okay.
But Lake Wombat is in New Zealand. And they don't have wombats in New Zealand, right?
No, they don't have wombats in New Zealand. No mammals, right?
No mammals. I mean, there are loads of people and sheep and things, but
right.
Some bats, right? No mammals.
No
mammals in New Zealand. They've got a problem with a load of non-native. Yeah, cats.
You have to cut off your mammary glands.
It's a kettle lake. Just thought you might like to know that. This Lake Wombat.
What does that mean?
It's 9,000 years old.
I did want to know that.
I've just realised I couldn't, with a gun to my head, define a kettle lake for you.
God, you really volunteered the information. Yeah. You didn't need to.
Well, yeah, I think you really felt we needed to know.
Every geography teacher who listens is absolutely screaming. Okay, let's have another.
Okay, here's a little pop culture one. This comes from Alex Wilson. I have a bit of a fun fact for you. John Bon Jovi of the band Bon Jovi, his first professionally released recording was not an epic rock power ballad like he does with his band, but a song called R2-D2, We Wish You a Merry Christmas, from the Star Wars Christmas album, Christmas in the Stars. And we covered this very slightly many years ago, probably a Christmas episode, or it might have popped up somewhere else. But yeah, he was working in his uncle's recording studio, you know, mopping floors and stuff like that, doing basic janitorial jobs, and they needed a singer. And so he had a good voice and they brought him in and he sang on this song.
How many times has the janitor stepped up and done a brilliant job? You know, like this John Bon Jovi was the janitor, basically?
Like Good Will Hunting.
Like Good Will Hunting, that's it.
But there's definitely two. One that's real and one that's not, so far.
It's not, I'll be honest, I'm not pitching this to the publishers yet.
And it's a very low bar to get an Andy pitch. So I would say, Penguin, Faber, put your phones down.
Yeah, stop that bidding war. Call it off. The Book of Genius Genesis, brackets, real and fake.
Chapter one, chapter two.
Oh, dear.
Index. Okay. Okay, here's one from Dane Stringfellow. Don't know.
Any relation? Yeah.
Doesn't mention. But he did say, I recently learned from my friend's dad that in the UK, you must have a license to scare cormorants. And then he says, and upon said scaring, you have to fill out a form listing the method of scaring and the number of cormorants leaving and or returning.
Beautiful.
Which is nice. But Dane, I will say, I'm just going to let this be a lesson to you. When you hear facts from your friend's dad, check them out. I checked it out. You don't need a license to scare cormorants. You need a license to use lethal methods to scare cormorants, i.e. shooting at them, which does feel more like killing cormorants than scaring them. But I suppose it would be scared as well. So you do need a license to take a gun out with you, which maybe is surprising if you're from America, Dane, but that's just how we do it here.
This is so, like, this is just a warning to the listener. We get sent a lot of facts, and it's our choice which facts we bring to this show.
Yeah.
And Anna decides to shame the incorrect facts.
I'm sure you had enough accurate ones. Yeah.
It just makes the UK sound like a place with some ridiculous laws. And actually, you know, this one is just saying, you know what, give the cormorants a chance first.
Did Dane say he was writing from America?
No, he didn't, but he said...
So you've just interpreted that as...
Well, look, he said, in the UK, you have a license to scare cormorants.
He might have just meant you have to have a license.
No, you're right.
I might have mistyped it, you know.
No, you're right.
I don't type them out. I do copy and paste.
you don't know how to do that. You know, there's a shortcut for it as well.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to save me time.
I'll talk to you afterwards.
All right.
No, I was actually still fascinated to learn it because you always go down a rabbit hole, don't you? So then I ended up in lots of like fisheries-based legal stuff, which was excellent. And I'll do a spin-off podcast on that.
Yes.
So thank you, Dane. I did really enjoy that.
Here's one that came in from Ian Clark. Okay. I just wanted to say how much I'm enjoying the podcast. It's become a regular companion on my drives. This is relevant. This morning I was sitting in the car, listening as usual, just about to head into the stables to see the ponies. So that's, I guess Ian has ponies. When a van pulled up from a company called Southern Equine Sheath Cleaning. That immediately caught my attention. For context, as I'm sure you'll appreciate, I didn't know this, in the equine world, a sheath refers to a horse's penis. So there's this company which just only does horse penis cleaning.
Wow.
That's quite something, isn't it?
That's extraordinary.
And like, it's stunning. And I was looking this up. I was on a train next to a child while I was doing this research, and I had to quite carefully tilt my screen because I didn't want the, you know.
So they could see better.
I didn't want to sort of like blow any young minds or anything like this. But anyway, the owner of this company is a woman called Cat Seaman.
They're not cats.
No, they're not cats, so it doesn't work at all. So it's completely irrelevant. But yeah. Basically, it's recommended. It's recommended you do it twice a year. Some horses never need it. Some horses they say that, I mean, obviously they're trying to sell you sheath cleaning services, so they will, like, much like, oh, you really should launder your pillows every 4 days. Yeah, come on. Yeah. But there are some friendly bacteria under there that you don't want to disturb, so don't do it all the time. And some horses go their whole life without needing a sheath clean.
But I bet they're really cocky horses, as it were. I bet everyone's prancing around. Poor old Barry's been sent to the sheath cleaner for the 9th time this year.
Absolutely would think it's a prank if Mrs. Seaman called up to say, hey, I'm a horse penis cleaning company. Just like, thank you, no, goodbye.
Don't hang up. She must start every conversation. Don't hang up.
Can I do one more before we get to the custodians? All right, here we go. This is from Olivia Byers, who says, howdy, y'all. She's actually requested, Andy, that you say that out loud, so if you wouldn't mind.
Howdy, y'all.
There we go. Fact the first. She's given us two facts. A small mountain town in North Carolina called Marion, population under 8,000, has officially designated Bigfoot as their town animal.
Lovely.
They celebrate this with a Bigfoot festival that draws over 40,000 people, which means the festival population is roughly 5 times the town's population itself. There are expert panels, Bigfoot-themed food, and my personal favorite, a Bigfoot calling contest. The festival slogan is, come a skeptic, leave a believer.
Lovely.
I have not attended. I am not yet ready. But fact the second is Ohio is in the process of legislating a state cryptid, specifically the Loveland Frogman. Now, we spoke about how every state has a state animal. Yeah. It's looking like the Loveland Frogman is going to be Ohio's, officially described by Ohio legislators as a frog-like bipedal creature standing approximately 4 feet tall. So it was spotted twice in March of 1972. But you'd think that's okay, that's too far away. But then again, in 2016, by two Pokemon Go players.
Who are looking at their screen and seeing all sorts of mad, weird animals all day long.
There is thought so that it might be a large iguana that they spotted, but no one has said. So yeah, so this cryptid might become the official.
Unbelievable that Ohio legislators have to get involved in this. Like, just leave it to that mad bloke in the pub. Just say, sure, make it whatever you like, hon. Just going to go back to housing here.
But this is that thing, like this town called Marion. That's a thing that is going to really help its economy every year, right? It's just such a... If you can land a weird animal or an idea in your town or a UFO, you really are just going to help the local economy. It just seems to be the case that it all...
Don't encourage more.
Don't encourage fun? Is that what you're against?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
No, John Maynard Keynes wrote a brilliant economics book about Nessie and how,
what it's done with
the macroeconomic implications of Nessie is a really interesting one.
Brings in a lot of money into Scotland. There's plushies everywhere. Every shop you go, they're all wearing the Scottish hat.
Yeah, right. That's enough of your facts, I think, especially yours, Dan.
Facts, the air quotes around that one.
Let's have some of our facts being dished out now to friends of the podcast, because if you join Clubfish, our secret members club, publicly available at patreon.com/clubfish. If you join at the friend of the podcast layer, you can get a headline fact from the podcast dedicated to you in perpetuity. And we're going to dish out a few of those headline facts to brand new friends of the podcast now. So who wants to go first?
I'll go. This one goes to Alyssa. Alyssa, your fact is that there is a skyscraper in New York which keeps itself stable with a 400-ton weight in the top.
Magic.
Whoa.
Magic.
Oh,
my goodness.
So cool.
Oh.
And it sort of hangs like a pendulum, and if the building goes that way, it's just sort of central weight.
It seems is that it? Right.
I can't remember. And the fact actually came from Alex Bell, so get in touch with him if you wanted explaining. Yeah. But yes, I do remember that. Skyscrapers are surprisingly hard to build.
That does. Does that not give you a fear of buildings in a way you might not have had it before? That it's all reliant on... Like in this case, a giant weight that's just swaying at the top.
I think it's okay.
Cool.
But I choose not to think about it.
Yeah.
I think that's key.
If you start thinking about anything for too long, you'll go completely mad.
Oh, I'd never think.
Okay, how about another one? For Amy G., one of Canada's leading crime writers, Howard Engel, lost the ability to read without losing the ability to write. My gosh, I remember this guy so well. I found it one of the most amazing things I've ever learned. He had a stroke, didn't he? And literally his hand was still connected to the words. So whatever bit of his brain controlled his hand could still write. But when he's seeing it, he can't read it. His eyes don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Absolutely crazy.
But was it a condition that was a disease that led to his death? I'm just thinking Terry Pratchett had a very similar thing. He got to the point where he couldn't read the words because they were all scrambled, but he still could obviously write what he was thinking.
I guess the extraordinary thing is that the hand is connected to such a different part of the brain to the eyes.
Yes.
So the eyes cannot understand something that the hand can. It's like when some people have certain types of epilepsy or have their brains cut in half to treat it, and you know, you'll ask them a question and they'll know the answer, but if you write it down for them, they'll be able to read the question but not know the answer. It's all that. The brain is insane stuff. Yeah.
Wonderful fact. Here's one. This goes out to Blue Limpet. And I hope you stick to this fact like glue, Blue Limpet. It's that Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple and inventor of the personal computer, met his wife on a dial-a-joke call. Dan, I'm going to hand over to you to explain dial-a-joke.
Well, I think back in the day in America, there used to be people who would put out numbers and you would call and an answer machine would just play down to you. And so every day, Steve Wozniak would load up new jokes onto his answer phone and people would call up and they would just learn a new joke to tell their friends. Mm. I believe from memory that that's what it was.
Yes.
And I'm trying to remember the connection of how his wife eventually...
She called the dial joke. I've got it in the archive here. And he said, "I bet I can hang up faster than you," and hung up. It was quite a bold move.
Mm. And that seduced her.
Yeah, apparently so. She must have phoned back.
Wow. Playing hard to get. It works.
I once saw him talk live in Edinburgh. He did a sort of just sitting on stage being interviewed. Mm. And afterwards, everyone was lining up to meet him and get his signature. And he was just signing laptops and iPhones.
Brilliant.
The back of them. Yeah, that's his method of a signing.
I suppose you would.
Just hand your phone over and he signs it for you.
The back of them makes sense. I was imagining the screen and thinking, how annoying would that be? And then it's just come off after a day.
All right, let's do another. This one is for Farhan Abrol. And your fact, I love this one, babies practice their first words before saying them out loud.
Very good.
It's amazing.
How much practice do they put in, though? Because often it's just kind of blah or mama.
Why aren't they better?
How much practice are they putting in?
They need to put more in, apparently.
Yeah.
Because it's not good enough.
No, it's very sweet. It's like baby birds do this as well, don't they?
Yeah.
Do they?
They sub-vocalize their songs. They'd say them they sort of murmur them to themselves before singing.
Mm. That's so good.
Yeah.
I would love to see if someone could film the practice. You know, I just would love to see the footage. If you can see their lips moving at all, if they give it even like a little whisper. Like
they're walking up and down in front of the mirror. Come on, what's my line? Line. Do you guys know what your first words were? I don't know what mine was.
Yeah.
What was your first word?
Apple.
Apple. Really good.
Which is weird because my mum hates fruit. Never has it in the house.
But she loves Steve Wozniak, who's the co-founder of Apple.
Huge fan, yeah. She got together with him, actually, by calling up her.
I can't remember mine. Do you know yours?
Marvellous. Then I said simply marvellous. No, I don't know mine. Let's have another.
Yes, here's one for Lydia Grant. Lydia, take this, look after it, guard it with your life. The first pair of Nike trainers was made in a waffle iron.
Yes.
I can't remember. Yes, it was sort of jammed into a waffle iron. I can't remember. Was it the base, the pattern on the base of the shoes or something?
I mean, that seems like the obvious bit, doesn't it? That's the bit that's like got waffle-like resemblance. Let's see. I've checked the archive and then all we've got after that is Dan saying that Nike is pronounced Nike like Mikey. So.
Okay, let's have another one. And this goes out to John Alexander Smith. And it's that rats dream of places that they want to visit.
I saw a rat today.
I saw a rat today.
You're kidding. Was it the same? It had a quite long tail and grey.
Yes. It was a rat. Yes.
Maybe let's. Where did you see it? My help.
Where did you see yours?
Near a cafe.
Mine was outside of Costa.
That's so interesting.
London, are we both talking about? Guys, honestly, we can narrow this down so quickly.
Mine was not London.
Mine was London and it wasn't Acosta.
different rap.
But Costa will be really appreciating this brand messaging we're getting out for them.
Pretty much outside. And it was a cute one. You know, some rats look gross. But
it was queuing. It was ordering a venti latte. Yeah, great.
You know, whatever's good for business.
Yeah, he had little gloves on. Great. Well, lovely.
Lovely.
Anyway, what was the fact again?
Rats dream of places they want to visit.
So Costa. Sweet. Yeah.
Okay, this one now goes out to Georgia Badgery. And her fact is that spiny anteaters only use half their penis during sex.
Yeah, right. I'm not even trying, they're saying to their other halves. This could be twice as good for you, actually. Now, isn't it they only use the left half or the right half?
How do you do that?
They've got very strangely shaped penises from a human perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
To them, we probably do.
Very good.
You know?
We don't want to have the anteater community writing in.
The wokest thing I've heard Andy say ever.
Sorry. Yes, it's they only use the left or right heads at any time.
Oh, they've got double head.
They've got four, actually.
Oh.
And they only use two at a time.
Ah.
I told you it was weird. From our Western point of view.
Is it in the East? It's actually middle, very acceptable.
From our middle class, like London elite bubble.
Marvellous existence.
Yeah. So that's nice.
Spiny anteaters.
Spiny anteaters.
But I don't think the penis is spiny. You see, you'd resent that name because you'd always have to explain it's not the penis that's spiny.
Yeah,
but
true.
The only person you're explaining it to is the same species, so I think they'd probably know, right?
Don't need to. They don't need to say it. And my vagina isn't spiny either. It's okay.
Great. Okay. Why didn't they tell us that when we're younger? We should be taught that at anteater school.
Okay.
Let's have one last one.
Here's one for Mike Spur. Mike Spur, take care of this one. The world record for horse long jump is shorter than the world record for human long jump. Something for humans to be proud of.
Yeah. This was one of mine. I remember discovering this.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this one. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Because you'd think the horses would be better, wouldn't you?
Yes. That's why we said yes to me using that.
That's why we were okay with it as a fact. It's great. Whereas running... We're sort of neck and neck, aren't we, with horses? There's always that horse versus human running race in Wales somewhere, I think.
It's terrain dependent. I think we can say that.
I think distance as well.
It's distance and stairs are the two complicating factors.
Distance humans
races.
Are better.
I know, but not at short distance. I don't think the Grand National would see the jockey going, do you know what? I'll actually get this done quicker if I just do it.
I'll leave you behind, Nelly.
This fact, by the way, from memory, correct me if I'm wrong, was a fact that we did at the Latitude Festival.
It was.
Oh.
I think it might have been our first festival. Possibly we did
That's
something
cool.
else, but it feels like that was our first.
And that is cool because this is about horses' longitude and how long they're jumping.
Nice.
You know what I'm saying? I bet we made that joke on the day.
I think we must have done.
You wouldn't leave gold like that unpicked up, would you?
No.
Yeah.
You
all right.
On that note,
I think
Andy.
We're going to end on that note. Yeah, yeah. Congratulations, everyone, for getting through all those jokes. And congratulations to our 8 new fat custodians. By whom I mean Mike Spur, Georgia Badgery, John Alexander Smith, Lydia Grant, Farhan Abrol, Blue Limpet, Amy G, and Alyssa. Enjoy your facts, love them, and we'll be back in another week for another Little Fish to dish out 8 more. Please do send in your facts to podcast@qi.com. They're such a treat to receive. We love getting them. So please do keep them flooding in, and we'll be back again in a few days' time with another episode of No Such Thing as a Big Fish. Until then, it's just time to say...
Not actually called that.
Not actually called that. Until then, thanks to Dan, my apparently live-in-the-moment editor, and to Anna for taking part. Thank you for playing, both of you, and congratulations.
Thanks for taking part, Anna.
It was a privilege.
Bye.